My fellow citizens, the American presidency is not supposed to be a journey of personal discovery. This world of threats and dangers, it's not just a community, and it doesn't just need an organizer.
All right, there are now two speech-making rock stars in the presidential race. After that by Sarah Palin last night, we know Barack Obama can inspire a crowd with talk of hope and change, and now we know that Sarah Palin can dish it to the Democrats with the best of them, with sarcasm, timing, and poise, as we heard right there. And for some reason last night, Obama's past as a community organizer was especially in her sights. There was the clip we just played and the one we're about to.
And when I ran for city council, I didn't need focus groups and voter profiles because I knew those voters and I knew their families too. Before I became governor of the great state of Alaska, I was mayor of my hometown. And since our opponents in this presidential election seem to look down on that experience, let me explain to them what the job involves. I guess a small town mayor is sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities. I might add that in small towns, we don't quite know what to make of a candidate who lavishes praise on working people when they're listening and then talks about how bitterly they cling to their religion and guns when those people aren't listening.
All right, let's talk about Sarah Palin's speech and what it means. With me now, Glenn Reynolds, University of Texas law professor and author of the blog Instapundit. Pilar Morera, reporter and columnist for La Opinión, the Spanish language daily, and a reporter with WNYC's Feed in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. And John Stanton from the Capitol Hill newspaper, Roll Call. And we invite your calls and comments, 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. They are already coming in. Welcome back, all of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, it's great to
John
be here.
John Stanton, what was the strategy behind this speech, and how'd she do?
I think she did actually very well. I think that, you know, the basic strategy that they were looking for was for her to come out and sort of put her marker down, let folks get to know her a little bit, and then sort of take on the role of the vice presidential candidate, which is really to be sort of an attack dog. And I think that on those levels, she did very, very well. I think that when she talked a little bit about some of the foreign policy issues, like the pipeline issue, it seemed like she was coming off a little bit like she was reading. She maybe didn't know necessarily as much about it. But I think all in all, she did a very, very good job, particularly with her attacks on Senator Obama.
Pilar, how'd she do? What were you thinking as you watched last night?
Oh, man. I was thinking, you know, it's great to see a woman up there. Women have become so powerful now, especially as voters, because women are going to be the majority of voters in November. I think it's about 54% of the voters will be women. That's the calculation. But on the other hand, I don't know how much in common she has with most women. I guess she did try hard to, she is a regular woman. She has kids. She has a husband. She works. I mean, all those things are actually true. But, you know, she tried to put herself and she tried to promote this image that the people in the Republican Party are the only ones who have regular lives. And I'm not sure that most Latinos that are my audience believe, and most of them have been voting Democrat, that they don't have real lives. And I don't know how it's going to sit with them. At the same time, her personality might be appealing to some Latinas. I heard somebody say she even looks Latina a little bit. So we don't know how she's going to play. We don't know her positions either.
Glenn Reynolds, how'd she do?
Well, I tried to take the pulse by listening to one of my local radio call-in shows here, and it seemed to be playing well based on that. In fact, there was one woman who called in and said, Sarah Palin doesn't just represent me, she lives my life. And that's a little over-enthusiastic because Sarah Palin is, after all, the governor of Alaska, and the woman who called in is not a governor. But, you know, I think she speaks to a lot of people, and I think my own sense of this, of the Palin nomination, is that it was a very deliberate sucker punch by the McCain campaign, hoping to draw out a lot of sexism on the part of the media and on a part of Obama supporters, and that it succeeded in doing that. And I think they also knew, because I didn't know this when they named her, but that she had been a sportscaster, that they figured she'd probably do a pretty good job standing up and reading from a teleprompter and giving a speech, and that all this hoopla leading up to that would turn that into a lot bigger triumph than it might have been had they named, say, I don't know, Mitt Romney, and he'd stood up and given a good speech from the teleprompter. So I think I think it was a very clever move on their part that was based on, you know, understanding their opponent's weaknesses and exploiting them. And if you read even some of the feminist law professor blogs and things, you'll find there is really a lot of unhappiness about the sexism that was directed at Palin, even among a lot of very left-leaning women. So, you know, I think it was a pretty slick move for them, and it's I think been good for them this week. The question is how she's going to hold up over the next 2 months.
By the way, John Stanton, what was all this dancing on Obama's past as a community organizer? Why was that a source for two episodes of mockery plus one from Rudy Giuliani? They don't like community organizers in poor rural areas of Alaska?
Well, no, I think what it is that you know, her biggest potential weakness and the thing that her nomination could hurt McCain on is her lack of a lot of experience. And I think this is their way of sort of drawing a distinction between what she has done and what Barack Obama has done. And, you know, community organizer does not sound as impressive, I guess, especially the way they cast it, certainly, as, say, the mayor of a small town or, you know, even 2 years as a governor. I think this was their way of trying to sort of battle back against this notion that they're going to be unable to come at Obama on his experience and sort of previewing how they will go at him.
Pilar, does community organizer to you signify liberal elite? Does it signify inner city person of color? Is there a racial as well as cultural signifier there, or just the experience thing that John was talking about for you?
I think for me personally, it doesn't signal elite. I know a lot of community organizers who are working class people in the African American, the Latino community, in all communities. But for this crowd and for the Republicans and for a lot of conservatives, that's kind of a joke. It's like you are not doing anything that has any real meaning. You know, they have this way of looking at things that is completely different. And in the Latino community, there's a lot of community organizers, and you know, there's community organizers were the ones that helped put together the huge pro-immigrant marches a couple of years ago. I don't think that's such a bad thing. I don't think that particular message is going to resonate that much with Latinos, tell you the truth. I believe that her message was empty of substance. She didn't talk about the economy. She didn't talk about immigration. We don't know what her position is on that. She didn't talk about anything of substance. It was all image, and it was all sort of a magic trick, in my view.
Glenn Reynolds, a magic trick. And before we go to the phones, your reaction to the community organizer repeated references?
I think what community organizer says is I think they hope it'll be read by the audience as basically a Democratic machine operative. I think that's the message they're trying to sing, that he runs as a different kind of politician and post-partisan, but in fact community organizers are well associated with sort of the traditional politics of the left. And that he's just another one of those. In terms of substance, actually, a blogger at a blog called Snapshots plugged the text of Joe Biden's speech and Sarah Palin's speech into a tool called Wordle, which sort of is supposed to highlight the most significant things said. And the most significant phrase in Biden's speech was Barack Obama, and the most significant in Sarah Palin's speech was country and America. So you can kind of, you know, make of that what you will, but that's I think, the difference in terms of the messages.
Let's take a phone call. Adele in Fairmont. You're on WNYC. Hello, Adele.
Hello. I'm actually in Piermont,
Piermont.
Oh, Piermont, New York, yes.
But no wonder I didn't recognize the name.
Okay. In any case, thank you for taking my call. And what I wanted to say is, you know, she gave delivered an excellent speech, but especially, you know, to the stirring up the party faithful. But I really didn't hear very much at all in it, other than just a little bit on the energy, you know, on drilling for oil, that would be for the people of the United States, for the citizens. It really didn't describe what a McCain-Palin administration would do. And so I'm hoping tonight, for instance, that McCain will outline, you know, in more substance. And I'm similar to the previous caller that said that heard very little of substance. It was she's very clever at designing phrases that are very cynical stabs, you know, at Obama and Obama's
right. But
history.
you want to hear more on the policy, and maybe we will hear that from John McCain tonight. Adele, thank you very much for your call. But it was a night, and as our guests have been saying, this is the traditional vice presidential role, especially during a convention, that is to go after the other guys. And it was a night for anti-Democratic Party zingers from the stage in St. Paul. Let's hear a little bit more of the speech by Sarah Palin.
Well, I'm not a member of the permanent political establishment. I've learned quickly these last few days that if you're not a member in good standing of the Washington elite, then some in the media consider a candidate unqualified for that reason alone. But for those reporters and commentators, I'm not going to Washington to seek their good opinion. I'm going to Washington to serve the people of this great country.
More of Sarah Palin from her Republican convention speech last night. Brian Lehrer here in St. Paul with Glenn Reynolds, University of Tennessee law professor and author of the blog Instapundit, Pilar Marrero, reporter and columnist for La Opinión, the Spanish language daily, and a reporter with WNYC's Feed in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School, and John Stanton from the Capitol Hill newspaper, Roll Call. And, well, Glenn Reynolds, what comes next for her? Because this speech alone, as I guess the first caller was saying, does not build a case for her readiness to be vice president or president.
No, and I don't really know how you do that with a speech. You know, in fact, that's, of course, been the rap that both Republicans and Hillary Clinton had on Barack Obama. You know, Hillary had that line where she said, and he gave a speech in 2004. I think you've got to get out there and let people get to know you, and that's what they're going to do with her. My guess is they're going to be sending her to a whole lot of areas that they think she can really get some traction on, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and the like. And I think that she's going to make a lot of the sort of reverse cultural snobbery angle. And you're going to hear that line she brought up in the speech about people bitterly clinging to their guns and religion a lot on the stump, I suspect. And, you know,
right.
That's the vice president's role.
John Stanton, same question.
Well, you know, I do think that you know, her job is really to go after the Democrats and Barack Obama on these issues. I don't think you're going to hear her say very much on the substance of what they may end up doing. And, you know, I think that the Republicans have sort of made a calculation here that they're not going to play towards the middle, which has been something that Obama and I think McCain early on both were at least attempting to do, to try to bring in sort of the voters that have not been talked to in past elections. It does seem that with her pick and certainly the rhetoric that they've been using in her speech and others the last couple days, that that they're looking to play the sort of traditional game of margins of voters, the sort of the base voters, to bring them back into the fold, try to get them energized, see how many of them they can possibly get out to vote. So,
John, does this speech and the sarcastic Giuliani speech that came before it, also widely seen in prime time, mean the culture wars are back on after what had started as a kind of postpartisan, you know, leave the Clinton-Bush-Gingrich era behind campaign on both sides?
Well, I mean, it's still not clear, I don't know that Obama's campaign has completely sort of engaged that yet. I think they're trying to find a way to sort of fight that war a little bit, but to still keep this sort of effort that they've had going to try to bring sort of some of these disaffected voters back into the fold. I do think Republicans, though, have fully settled on this as sort of their plan of attack. And generally speaking, when they have done that, Democrats have ultimately sort of taken the bait and gone into that war with them. And that's dangerous, I think, for Democrats. They've never done very well at that, so.
Let's take another call. Ilna in Mayopac. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ilna.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. All this wonderful program you have.
Thank you.
My take on the issue of Palin is Democrats constantly are attacking her as a lack of experience when she becomes vice president. And if something happens to McCain, how she's going to handle the country? I mean, we are having a president, nominated President Obama, who has no experience at all to run the country. But the answer for vice president is that if McCain, something happened to McCain, if she is able to run the country. I mean, the question is Obama able to run the country now? I mean, we are constantly attacking her because she's a woman. Can she handle this? Can she, you know, family? Yes, we all have families, and her family is like every other family.
So you're more willing to accept an inexperienced candidate as vice president than president, and you think people need to remember the difference of their places on the ticket?
Of course. I mean, she is a vice president. Obama is running for a presidential. I mean, he is the one who's going to be running the country. But hers is
people will say, she is a heartbeat away as vice president, and McCain is 72 years old, so she better be ready to step in and negotiate with Putin and all that other stuff. What do you say to that?
I think she can. I think she can. I mean, in so many little times, she has accomplished a lot. As just a PTA mother, I mean, she has moved the steps. And we are constantly attacking her. We are talking about the bridge to nowhere. Yes, in the beginning she was for it because of less expenses. But then when the expenses went up, we are all people of changing mind. You calculate, no good. So let's drop it. She dropped it. She went against it.
Ilna, thanks a lot.
Thank
really
you
appreciate
so much.
It. Call us again. We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC at the Republican Convention in St. Paul.
While I was at it, I got rid of a few things in the governor's office that I didn't believe our citizens should have to pay for. That luxury jet was over the top. I put it on eBay.
All right, more Sarah Palin from her speech last night. Brian Lehrer on WNYC at the Republican Convention in St. Paul. We'll play another clip in a minute. We'll keep going on this for a while because this was a big deal. My guests, Pilar Marrero, reporter and columnist for La Opinión, the Spanish Language Daily, and a reporter with WNYC's Feed in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School, John Stanton from the Capitol Hill newspaper Roll Call, and Glenn Reynolds, University of Tennessee law professor and the author of the Instapundit blog. By the way, while Glenn is here, I'll mention that he is what are we calling you, Glenn? You're not an advisor exactly. To our 30 issues in 30 days.
No.
Kind of a co-participant. We're partnering with Instapundit and with the Huffington Post in our 30 issues in 30 days series this year. And as you may know, while the nominating conventions are going on in Denver and St. Paul, Our 30 Issues in 30 Days nominating process is now underway at WNYC.org, and it closes today. We've had this open for about 3 weeks, so by the end of today, nominate an issue for our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. About 200 people have nominated already. We will vote on your issues beginning next week. You can nominate one right now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Maybe you've gotten additional ideas from having paid attention to the Democratic and Republican conventions, where a lot of issues, certainly, even among, you know, in and among the snark that we've heard in both cities, the issues were certainly being raised. Maybe you got some ideas for issues you'd like to nominate for our 30 Issues series. Glenn, anything you want to say about that?
I just think it's a great venture, and I thought I'd mention in passing, too, I was actually up at the RNC for a couple of days. I had to come back to teach my classes, but I was with Pajamas Television, which is pjtv.com, and that is a streaming internet HD news service, which is covering this as well. I got to be an anchor and all. It was kind of a fun experience for a law professor.
All right. What do you each think about the media issue that they've been raising? We heard it in that clip. Pilar Marrero, have the media, in your opinion, been fair to Sarah Palin since her introduction on Friday?
You know what? I was going to say, as a woman, all women have to go through some sexism in their work life, in their life. We all have gone through it, you know, sexual harassment, sexism, and the inability to advance when you know you are more qualified than the male on your side. But you know what? Women, we learn how to move ahead, how to keep going. Unless something illegal is done to us, we are not running around complaining about it. I never saw the sexism they everybody comments about towards Hillary Clinton, except in a few moments where somebody in the audience, you know, shouted out, "Iron my shirt," or something like that. You know, I never saw that kind of sexism they were talking about. And in the case of Sarah Palin, I only see it when they talk about her family, whether she can juggle the family, and that point is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, she's just been looked at. I mean, we don't know. For example, I have a lot of questions about her. You know, has she ever been out of the country? Does she have a passport? I mean, does she know where Latin America is and what the country's names are? I mean, I don't know. I mean, she's from Alaska, you know. I have no idea whether she knows where Mexico is or Argentina or Venezuela or Colombia. I want to know that. And if I ask that, I don't think I should be called sexist.
On the sexism, our political director, Andrea Bernstein, saw someone in the hall here last night, a guy, a delegate, very pro-Palin, wearing a button and offering one to a woman delegate he was with, a button that said, "Alaska, the coldest state with the hottest governor." And he thought it was really cool, and the woman didn't want to wear it. She said, no, this is not what it's about. I don't want to wear this. That's sexist. And he said, well, it doesn't mean hot in that sense. It means exciting. It's just a little anecdote. John Stanton from Roll Call, what do you think about the media issue that's being raised? Obviously, some of it is just Republican strategy that we hear year after year, but do you find anything particularly to be self-critical of with respect to the early coverage of Sarah Palin?
I think that any questions about, you know, whether or not she can juggle her family and being vice president are obviously silly and definitely sexist, and people should be called out on it. Although, frankly, I have not heard, except for Republicans saying people are saying it, I've only heard a few examples of anybody in the media sort of bringing that issue up. I think that on this broader question of, you know, her family is off limits, what's going on with her family is off limits, I would agree with that if it wasn't for the fact that she has made her family sort of part of the campaign. I mean, they bring up her family constantly. They bring up the fact that she has a special needs child sort of consistently. And when you do that, that sort of puts them into play. And it becomes a little difficult for reporters, because I think most reporters do want to sort of respect the privacy, particularly of a candidate's children. But at the same time, once a candidate starts sort of making them an issue, you know, I have family values, or, you know, I have this special needs child or whatever, then it does seem to me that we have a legitimate area to start asking questions about. So I think a lot of it has been sort of part of this broader effort, though, of the Republicans to insulate her from any kind of questioning.
Glenn Reynolds, you're a blogger, and, you know, some of this family talk really was initiated in the blogosphere, because originally the liberal blog Daily Kos And I think Andrew Sullivan on his blog started spreading this rumor, really, based on some circumstantial evidence that maybe Sarah Palin was not actually the mother of Trigg, the baby, but that Bristol, the 17-year-old, was really the mother, and Sarah was going to raise it to cover up what had happened. And that kind of pushed the family, apparently, to release the truth about Bristol Palin's pregnancy, because that was the more acceptable scandal, or however you want to look at it. But it's interesting that that came out of the blogosphere in a way that probably would not have come from the, you know, the traditional media.
Well, you know, I don't know. The joke I heard actually about this was somebody said the way to, they could have kept the media from covering this was to just leak to the press that John Edwards was the father of Bristol's baby, because the press, of course, was completely unwilling to cover the Edwards scandal, even after it was out in tabloids, and that does raise questions of a double standard. I will note in the Politico today, there's an article with a big headline that says Clinton aides Palin treatment sexist, and the article says that Howard Wolfson and also Deborah Tannen, who, you know, is a feminist author, and a variety of other people have actually identified a whole bunch of examples of sexist comments from Joe Biden, from the National Organization for Women, which said she's more a conservative man than she is a woman, Ed Schultz, John Roberts of CNN, Sally Quinn. I mean, there's a whole list of them in here. So I think it's been, I think there's been a real issue. And I have to say, I agree with something that I actually saw originally on a left-leaning feminist blog, which is that the McCain campaign knew they were going to draw this response, knew that certain segments of the Obama supporters could not control themselves and would do this, and that it would alienate a lot of women. And I think that people performed as expected.
Now, on this point of when it's legitimate to talk about the family and cover the family, here's a comment from a listener who writes, I was really surprised Palin spent so much time discussing her family in the speech, especially her son's impending military service and her infant special needs. I thought they were trying to take her family off the table, but she put it there front and center. Glenn, I'll stay with you on that. What'd you think about that?
I think this is like telling her she asked for it. And I think it's a little hypocritical because, in fact, politicians all have to put their families forward. If a politician didn't put their family forward, people would say that was a legitimate reason to ask questions because that was atypical behavior. So a claim that a politician sort of opens the door this way is kind of silly. There used to be rules about what was supposed to be off limits for the respectable media. Those rules have, and Mickey Kaus actually has a post on this today, they've gone out the window in this election. I think that, it's another thing that's going to discourage people from going into politics, for one thing. And I think also it really has exposed what I think is a pretty obvious partisan slant in the way this is handled. When it's John Edwards, we're all worried about journalistic ethics and privacy. When it's Sarah Palin, it's all about the public's right to know and opening the door in a way that certainly John Edwards did every bit as much. And yet the press was unwilling to cross that line on a story that, frankly, most people in the press knew was true long before they published it. It wasn't a rumor. It wasn't a question. It wasn't this ridiculous, bogus stuff that Andrew Sullivan was trying to trump up. It was, in fact, something that a lot of people, as Mickey Kaus again noted, had personal knowledge of and still wouldn't touch. So it's very hard to say there's not a double standard here.
Vincent in Dobbs Ferry, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on your earlier conversation about her talking about community organizers in such a disparaging way. I think you and your guests aren't hearing the message when she talks about community organizers. I think her intended audience understands what she means. Blacks, Hispanics, and city people live in communities, while the folks that are in her audience live in towns or neighborhoods. Community organizers are historically thought of as outside agitators. And the word communities speaks to special interests, like welfare, you know, commune, people who live in communes, people who are communists, whereas red state folks can take all they can get from the federal government and from blue states, frankly. They never concede that they're collecting welfare. I think that's the hidden language, and that Republicans have learned how to control the vocabulary in these subtle ways.
Pilar Marrero, do you want to react to that? Does it strike you that way, or is that too reductionist?
I think he's right. When she was talking, for example, about small town people, the kind of people she grew up with, they do the hardest work in America, grow our food, run our factories, all that, I was thinking, aren't those the undocumented immigrants who do that? I mean, aren't they the ones who grow our food and run our factories? I mean, she's talking to an America, to an image of America that is incomplete. But that is her base. That is the base of the Republican Party. The thing is, there's a whole other America on the other side that is doing exactly the same thing and doesn't get recognized for it.
John Stanton?
Well, I do think.
Do you have a thought about that?
I think that it does mean a number of things for different people. I mean, I don't know that I think that they're necessarily explicitly trying to play towards sort of a racist thing so much as I think Pilar is right. There is this idealistic notion of what America maybe used to be that a lot of folks have created, particularly sort of Republican base voters. You know, they have this notion of this almost 1950s-esque America that never necessarily even existed, but that's sort of this idea that they have and that a lot of Americans have, and that they're trying to play to people that sort of image appeals to, and that is definitely not, you know, your immigrant community. That is definitely not sort of a lot of your urban communities or even suburban communities. That is a much more sort of rural America notion that is out there, and there's this sort of feeling amongst a lot of voters, particularly Republican base voters, that America has been lost and they want to try to regain it. And so I think that is playing sort of into this broader effort to energize those folks and push that theme. So,
all right. Well, we will go out on a clip relevant to that from Sarah Palin's speech last night. I want to thank all three of you. Glenn Reynolds, University of Texas law professor and author of the InstaPundit blog, also a partner with us in our 30 Issues in 30 Days series. And again, remember, tonight is the last day, the deadline for nominating an issue for the series. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to do that. Pilar Marrero, reporter and columnist for La Opinion, and John Stanton from the Capitol Hill newspaper Roll Call. Thanks a lot to all of you for coming on with us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I might add that in small towns, we don't quite know what to make of a candidate who lavishes praise on working people when they're listening and then talks about how bitterly they cling to their religion and guns when those people aren't listening. We tend to prefer candidates who don't talk about us one way in Scranton and another way in San Francisco.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC at the Republican Convention. We continue our Meet the Delegate series now with an Ohio delegate named James Brady. He's a security consultant. Tell us where you're from and what's great about your hometown.
I am from the great state of Ohio, and as you can see from the convention, we're dead center up front, and Ohio being a very important swing state. I'm actually from the 11th District, which encompasses the east side of Cleveland, so Shaker Heights. I live in Shaker Heights, and I know there's a lot of New Yorkers who know where Shaker Heights is.
Shaker Heights, a pretty comfortable suburb of Cleveland,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah, very comfortable. A lot of press about Shaker, but a very, very diverse community, whether it be African-American, white, Jewish, and so it's just a great community altogether.
So what issues do you think are most on the minds of people in Shaker Heights right now?
Issues on the people of Shaker Heights in general, and the Northeast Ohio is just the economy and improvement. What can Northeast Ohio do to do better from an economic standpoint? I mean, I think that we've all seen a lot of the problems over the last 3 to 5 years, 10 years really, in Northeast Ohio, whether it's job losses or job creation or lack thereof. And I know for me, I'm involved in local politics. I'm a local city councilman in Shaker. And, one of the things that I'm concerned about is, we have an unbelievable talent pool in Northeast Ohio, Case Western Reserve University, the Cleveland Clinic, a lot of the bio enterprises there. And we're seeing that community graduate from school and then leave. And that's a huge problem.
You were telling me off the air that you think it's not the scene here at the Republican convention that it was in Denver last night,
right,
in terms of the hoopla and the rah-rah-rah and
right,
the emotional energy level.
Right.
Is that a Democrat-Republican thing, or why the difference?
Well, I can give you my politically correct answer, or I can give you my honest answer. My honest answer is I really think that, obviously, the hurricane started off things. So I think the hurricane really set the tone for the event. But me personally, I don't like rah-rah. I like the fact that John McCain is not a rah-rah guy. He's not the orator that Senator Obama is. But I think that when he does talk, it has true substance. And the thing that that I like most about Mr. McCain is the fact he's very decisive. He made a quick decision that look, this convention wasn't going to be a big party because we have people potentially in peril in the South. So he made that decision, and more importantly, I think he reaches out to both sides. He's one of the few guys in Congress that gets kudos from the left and kudos from the right. We saw that in the early on stages.
What does it mean to you to be a Republican in 2008?
To be a Republican, that's a good question. I'm glad you didn't say to be an African-American Republican, because everyone keeps asking me that. For me to be a Republican in 2008, I believe in the values of the Republican Party, of the old values of the Republican Party, in that, it's not the government's responsibility. The government should help facilitate the country, not the other way around. The government doesn't. We don't work for the government. The government works for us. And I believe that the Republican Party has kind of lost its way a little bit over the last 8 years to that degree. I consider myself more centric. I don't believe that it's the government's job to tell people what they should and shouldn't do from a morality standpoint. And I think that if we focus on keeping government out of the way and allowing the country to be successful, then the Republican Party will regain its strength in the country.
So I won't ask you, oh, golly gee, an African-American Republican, oh, wow.
Right.
But why do you think after all these years, all these election cycles, the party is still failing so miserably at attracting more African Americans?
I'm a marketing guy. Sales and marketing is what I do, and I think that the party has not done a good job of reaching out to the African American community, because I know there are a lot more black Republicans out there, and minority Republicans. There's a lot more out there. But I think the Republican Party has done a poor job of allowing the media to paint the picture that all Republicans are mean old white guys in stuffed suits who only want to, only want to keep people down, and that's the way it's being portrayed. And I don't think we've done a good job of saying that that's not the case. And I challenge people to say, if you sit down and write what your own personal values are on paper, Republican or Democratic aside, and then take a look at where they line up as opposed to the Republican or Democratic side, I would argue that a lot of those values would come back to Republican values.
Who's your favorite Republican ever?
My favorite Republican ever? Probably Abraham Lincoln. I mean, he freed the slaves. From a more relevant time period, probably Ronald Reagan. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and saw what he did for America and for the global market and bringing down the evil Russian Empire. And I think, it was something to aspire to. And it's unfortunate that we don't, we allow the media to paint all Republicans in that picture, because I think we might have the opportunity to miss a whole generation of young kids, young people who feel like their only path is to be Democrats because the Republicans have fallen out of touch. I don't think that's the case at all.
Thanks for talking to us. Enjoy the rest of the convention.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Was a night for anti-democratic party zingers from the stage here in St. Paul last night. Here is a montage of the zingiest.
I guess a small town mayor is sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities.
I'm sorry that Barack Obama feels that her hometown isn't cosmopolitan enough. That it's not flashy enough. Maybe they cling to religion there. Ooh.
It's time for the party of big ideas, not the party of Big Brother.
Obama promised to take public financing for his campaign until he broke his promise. Obama was against wiretapping before he voted for it. When speaking to a pro-Israeli group, Obama favored an undivided Jerusalem, like I favor and like John McCain favored. Well, he favored an undivided Jerusalem, don't get too excited, for one day until he changed his mind. Well, I'll tell you, if I were Joe Biden, I'd want to get that VP thing in writing.
In politics, there are some candidates who use change to promote their careers. And then there are those, like John McCain, who use their careers to promote change, whose names appear on laws and landmark reforms, not just on buttons and banners or on self-designed presidential seals.
And I have one more recommendation for energy conservation. Let's keep Al Gore's private jet on the ground.
Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin, Rudy Giuliani, some of last night's zingers here in St. Paul with me now. By the way, you might want to post to our webpage, who had the zingier zingers these 2 weeks, the Democrats or the Republicans? Who had the zingier zingers? Go to WNYC.org and post your favorite at Brian Lehrer Show. Just click on Brian Lehrer Show when you're at WNYC.org. With me now, Republican Congresswoman Shelley Moore Capito from the Charleston, West Virginia area. She's here in our two square feet at Radio Row. Thanks a lot for joining us, Congresswoman. Hello.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So as someone from a thinly populated rural state, do you identify especially with Sarah Palin's story?
Most definitely. I see a lot of similarities between West Virginians and Alaskans. We're up from the bootstraps kind of folks. It's a lot of small towns. It's a lot of kitchen table issues. She's a strong woman, and I think we got a lot of strong West Virginia women, and so I think West Virginia will identify very, very closely with the governor.
Did you have any favorite zingers last night?
You know, I had a favorite zinger, but you didn't play it.
Yes.
I liked it when
I thought it was... checked with you first.
Yes. I thought it was hilarious when she said, and when the styrofoam pillars are taken back to the studio lot. I thought, I mean, that was a little... I loved it. I thought it was funny, and... You know, you wonder, are you going too far? But humor's always a wonderful way to get your message across without, you know, killing the messenger or killing the person that you're trying to hit.
Do you think the tone of last night's speeches, though, all of them, mean the culture wars are back?
I hope not. I mean, I think that that we should be more, you know, broad-minded. We need to look at the important issues of the day. And coming from me, you're probably going, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But I really believe that people are going to be voting with their pocketbooks. They're going to be voting and looking for experience, realizing what kind of world we're in right now. And I hope the culture world, the culture wars are a thing of the past.
Because when you think about the zingers, I mean, we're not really in a highly sarcastic moment in America right now. We're really in kind of an earnest moment, aren't we, with people hurting the way they are?
Well, we should be. And, I mean, I represent a state that always has economic challenges. And we're always looking for a better way, a better way for our children to remain in our state and work. And that's been a big challenge for us. But at the same time, you know, sarcasm and humor, I guess, are sort of intersecting in a way. And I don't think we should lose our sense of humor here either, because I think that if you become so serious, you become too bitter and too cynical. And so I would say that, you know, we need to keep our optimistic view of where we want to go, but let's have a little sense of humor with it. Let's have a little fun with it, too.
You know, you mentioned the word cynicism, and some Democrats and some commentators are saying that this was a cynical pick for vice president by John McCain because it was political, that he is somebody who has always prided himself on saying he was going to do the right thing. He was going to pick the person for vice president who would help him govern the most And what he seems to have done, according to his critics, is to pick somebody for purely win the election purposes. Somebody who's a woman who can go after Hillary voters, somebody who's a Christian conservative who can go after that part of the base that was not energized. But, you know, compared to the other people who are on the list, Mitt Romney or whoever, this is not somebody who's ready to be president if John McCain has a heart attack on January 21st.
You know, cynical would not be the way I characterize it. I was shocked when I heard that it was Governor Palin. I've never met her. I had heard certainly about her. But as I've learned to know more about her, the fact that she represents an energy state, the fact that she has executive experience, the fact that she has a very full life where she's experiencing a lot of just regular living experiences is an attractive thing for me. And I think, you know, she mentioned Harry Truman in her speech. Didn't he sell hats at one point in his career? I don't think
was
we should be...
Was that the haberdasher reference last
night?
I think
so, yes. Maybe she should have said hats. But I don't think it's fair to just because somebody hasn't come out of 35 years in the United States Senate, to me, there's where the cynicism maybe should lie. And, you know, if you look at electoral votes, it's a wash.
Remember when the hurricane was happening, Senator McCain said, we should all take off our political hats and put on our American hats. So then we've got a real hats theme going here now.
Yeah,
with the haberdasher,
funny, yeah.
And Harry Truman. Here's a comment from one of our listeners who says, both McCain's and a Fox commentator have said that she has foreign policy experience because Alaska is close to Russia. Please ask your guests what they think.
I think that's a stretch. Quite honestly, I mean, I've never had the privilege of visiting Alaska. Two of my children have. I wish I had been on the trips with them. I don't think that because, you know, they're closest in range, I'm not sure that would qualify you. Although there may be some cultural experiences in Alaska that I might not be privy to, having never been there, that may more closely align her to that region of the world. But you know what? We live in a smaller world now. I mean, I know a lot more about foreign policy and what's going on around the world than I probably did 10 years ago, just by virtue of the media and our ability to understand it. And does that qualify me? Maybe not, but I think it. You know, as long as you're a good decision maker, you can learn. You have great skills. That's what she's bringing to this ticket.
Palin just got a passport last year. While Obama has been on the Foreign Relations Committee, has roots in Kenya, lived in Indonesia, does she have the experience to become president?
Well, I certainly think so, but I think she has a learning curve. I wouldn't deny that. I think she needs to dig in and experience not only travel, but experience, you know, briefings and all the sorts of things that she will be exposed to. But if I look objectively, which I'm not objective, so I won't even say that, but at Senator Obama's foreign experience, he's been chairman of a committee. He's never had a hearing where he could be learning more about this. He's just now, it took, 900 days to go back to Iraq. I mean, I'm not sure that's the exact attack I would take on her from their camp.
Is there a basic ideological tension now between John McCain trying to run as an independent, a maverick, and Sarah Palin, the red meat for the base Christian conservative? Is there more of a question now of which John McCain would run the country?
No, because I think if you know one thing about John McCain, he's his own man. He's going to make a decision. He's going to engage in straight talk. He's not afraid to make unpopular statements or decisions. And I think that's the way he will govern. I certainly think he will use the advice and counsel of a exceptionally gifted, I think, governor of a great state. But at the end of the day, it's John McCain making the decision, and believe me, he'll be the one making it.
Do you think he came to this tone, last night's tone in the campaign, reluctantly? He doesn't seem to want to campaign that way, but now they're doing it.
Well, you know, I kind of bristle a little bit to think that this was I didn't find last night highly negative. Sure, there's zingers and all that, but, you know, when I watched the Democrat convention, they're zinging the other way. I think you have to do that because
Did you have a least favorite Democratic zinger?
You know, I didn't really think about it that much, to be honest with you. And they have other issues, but, you know, I just thought that I think that we can keep this on the high road. It's going to get into, well, obviously the media has just attacked her and her personal life in a very vicious way.
Someone posted that their favorite Democratic zinger was Bill Richardson saying, John McCain can afford $500 shoes, but we can't afford his flip-flops. Okay, so go ahead and post at WNYC, folks. Who had the better zingers, the Democrats or the Republicans? What was your favorite from either convention at WNYC.org? Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Congresswoman, we have 20 seconds left. What do you want to hear from Senator McCain in his speech tonight? More of the same?
I want to hear a clear vision for where he wants to take the economy. And the domestic issues. I think we know where John McCain wants to go internationally. I think he needs to talk about that. And I'd like to see some of his compassion and warmth come through, because I think he has a harder time with that.
Republican Congresswoman Shelley Moore Capito from the Charleston, West Virginia area here at the Republican Convention in St. Paul. Thanks so much for stopping by our booth at Radio
Thank Row. You very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.